The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free Arvcom do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free Arvcom, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free Arvcom, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission beginning.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free Arvcom starts now.
That's right, Radio Free Arvcom starts right now. It is Monday, May 10th, and we have another outstanding lineup for you today, fellow Arvcomers. Quick couple of program notes before we get started. To all the winners of the Bushmaster Magpul contest, I know you've been waiting patiently for your prizes. I went to mail them all out last week, and the amount of money it was going to cost me was more than I had on my debit card. So I have to work a little something out. We're going to get it all mailed out tomorrow morning, except for the people that won Bushmaster hats. Your hats aren't in yet, so I can't mail those out to you. I've been working with Bushmaster to get those. And the people that have PMAGs coming, yours won't be mailed out until Wednesday. Everybody else's stuff, I promise, it's all packaged up. It's all ready to go. It will be mailed out tomorrow morning. It just was a little bit more money to ship than I thought it was going to be, and I wasn't ready to do it. But I'll get that out to you. So now with that out of the way, let's get started with today's show. We have, as usual, Joe DeBurgle is going to start the show off for us. After that, we have an interesting couple of guests that I think you guys are going to really be interested in, is Liam and Anthony Gorman. And this young kid, Liam, is going through, I mean, this kid is so brave, I don't even know how to explain it, but they put together a Band-Aid drive for kids that are in similar situations to his. And I don't want to go into it too much right now. We'll go into it when we get him on the air, but I think you guys will be touched by this. If you're not, then you just don't have a soul. After that, Neil Puckett, our good friend, retired Lieutenant Colonel in the Marine Corps, who is the lead attorney for Petty Officer McCabe, the last of the three Navy SEALs to be acquitted of all charges. He'll be on to give us an AAR of the trial and kind of break it down for those of us that weren't there, which is pretty much everybody. He'll tell us exactly what happened in the courtroom and some of the goings on there. And then after that, we have the author of The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope. I'm sure most ARFCOMers know who he is. His name's Richard Mack. He's one of America's greatest sheriffs. And he'll be on the show in the second hour for the majority of that second hour. So another great show lined up. Without further ado, let's go straight into the superstar, Joe DeBurgle. Joe, how are you today?
Hi, John. How are you, my friend?
Doing outstanding today, as usual. It's always good to hear from you. We don't have a whole lot for you and I to talk about tonight, but the big event is coming up this week, right?
It is. I'm already wheels down and boots on the ground here in Charlotte, North Carolina, the site of this year's annual meeting for the National Rifle Association, and hope to see a whole bunch of fellow outcomers come out here. John, we're expecting record numbers. Estimates are going to be approximately greater than last year. We're looking to most likely exceed 75,000.
Holy cow.
It's going to be a great, great weekend.
That is a ton of people. It starts off Friday, is that right, and goes through Sunday?
The official kickoff's Thursday. We have events planned Friday, Saturday, and Sunday between the vendor floor and the Celebration of American Values and the Freedom Celebration. A great line of talent. The best thing about any type of NRA conference, annual meeting, is the fellowship of just being around. So thousands and thousands of fellow NRA members. It's great.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet the vibe there is just fantastic. You said there's a floor of merchandise and stuff like that. Is that kind of like just a big gun show type thing?
What it is, if anybody's ever been to SHOT, it's a small version of the SHOT Show. There's all the major distributors, manufacturers, and all other fire-related type of items are all out there. It sold out months ago, so all the greats that we're familiar with, from Magpul to all the air platform manufacturers, and they're all going to be here. I'm going to go renew some friendships on the floor there, as well as the major distributors and manufacturers, Smith & Wesson, Glock, Remington, and it goes on and on and on.
Outstanding. So that means everybody who's listening, if you are in the Charlotte area, you can get out there this coming up weekend. Make sure you do, because it is going to be an outstanding show out there. They're just putting on for three straight days, I guess, Thursday evening all the way through Sunday. There's going to be all kinds of Second Amendment superstars out there. Some celebrities are going to be out there. We know the Nudes will be there. I'm sure Karl Malone will be out there. I'm sure Tom Selleck will probably make an appearance. Who am I missing?
Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North will be here. Glenn Beck is going to substitute for Sean Hannity, who had unfortunately canceled at the end. Sarah Palin, see Governor Huffy, Chuck Norris. There's going to be quite a few celebrities, political elected officials, and just good old folks like myself walking about and hopefully meeting as many ARFCOMers as we can.
That's outstanding. So your charge for me is to get out there, twist some arms, see if you can get some of these people on Radio Free ARFCOM. What do you say?
I'm going to do my very best, as I promised before. The tough thing is just trying to gathering cats, herding cats. It's everybody's plan going 10 different ways. So between doing my official functions and trying to arrest all these people in the place, I will do my very best. If not this weekend, we'll definitely schedule them for our shows in the coming months.
I understand you have a special guest that's there with you right now. Is that right?
I do. If I can get his attention, I will try to bring him over, but we'll see if I can persuade him to come on.
Herding cats already, huh?
Well, I tell you, it's fantastic, but I did persuade him to come over. John, I'm going to put you on the phone with our president, Ron Schmitz, and he has a few things to say to the listening audience, okay?
That's fantastic. Thanks, Joe.
Hi, John. How are you?
I am doing great today, Ron. Thanks for taking a couple minutes to come on Radio Free ARFCOM. Just for our listeners, this is Ron Schmitz. He is the president of the National Rifle Association. You guys are already in Charlotte, I understand, preparing for the big show this weekend.
We're in Charlotte, preparing for probably what's going to be the biggest convention that's ever in the history of NRA. You know, we were here 10 years ago. We set records then, and we're going to set records now again this year when we're here. I think it's just going to be a barn burner, and it's going to be a fantastic convention.
It just sounds great. Just one question for you, and I'll let you go. I know you guys are busy and in the middle of something. If you're a first-timer, you've never been to an NRA annual meeting, and you wanted to go to Charlotte, what's the one big thing you could look for as a first-timer that you'd really be impressed with?
I think the first time when you're here, the convention floor, the exhibits, I kind of look at it as almost like a big candy store. No matter what your desire is, and anything with the outdoors and the hunting and shooting industry, you'll find it there, and you're going to go home with a list that you can't live without.
It just sounds like a great time, and I promise next year I will be at the NRA annual meetings. I couldn't make it this year. But you guys go ahead, hold down the fort for me. I know it's going to be an outstanding event, and I appreciate you taking a couple minutes just to come on and talk to the listeners of Radio Free ARFCOM.
Well, thank you very much, and come on down and see us if you get a chance.
Will do. Thank you again.
Thank you.
That's Ron Schmitz, the president of the NRA, ladies and gentlemen, on. Just to give us a real quick teaser of what's going to happen this weekend in Charlotte, I wish I could be there. Do we have Joe back on?
I'm back on, John.
Okay, Joe, I appreciate you being on. I know you are in the middle of a dinner event right now. Go ahead and take care of your business, and I look forward to getting an AAR, a complete update of everything that goes down this weekend next Monday on the show.
we certainly would do that. Have a great show. Give my best to Liam and Anthony, as well as Lieutenant Colonel Puckett. You did a fantastic job of making sure our final SEAL made it home A-OK. And I just want to take this time right now, John, to say thank you for all your stewardship from running these causes through our great fan base in ARFCOM.
It's the least I could do. It's the least I could do, Joe, and it's nothing, no sweat off my brow, and I'm happy to do it for us. Anytime we need something done, if it's a good cause, you know RFA will be there for you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great week.
Thanks Joe. Bye-bye. Joe DeBurgolis with a special surprise guest for Radio Free ARFCOM, Ron Schmidis, the president of the NRA. They are in the middle of a dinner function. That's why we had a slightly truncated version of Joe's segment, but he will be on for an extended segment next week, giving us all the updates of all the happenings and goings on at the NRA convention. If you are in the Charlotte area this coming up weekend, 14th through the 16th, just grab the kids and go over there. I just want to go to the mini SHOT Show over there. I'll bet there's going to be so much stuff in there that we're just not used to seeing. Oh, I wish I could be there, but I can't, but I will be there next year. So I'll have that to look forward to. Real quick, let me give a shout-out to PsyOps for Fun, one of our best female posters on AR15.com. She had the thread of the week, and once we get the Radio Free ARFCOM stickers in, I'm going to send her one. It is for her thread, the Flash Mob thread. I call it a Flash Mob thread because she posted it up, and that thing went from zero to infinity pages in no time. The live feed of the Greek riots earlier this week. I know a lot of you who are on during the afternoon of that day can remember it very well. It was when ARFCOM became aware of FODOG, and that was one heck of a thread, I tell you what. So PsyOps for Fun, you have that to look forward to. Once I get these Radio Free ARFCOM stickers in, I will be sending you a couple of those for your Thread of the Week, which is a new feature here on Radio Free ARFCOM. We try to give you guys, you know, some free stuff every once in a while. We can't do it every week, but I think now that I got the stickers coming in, and I will have some Boltface logo stickers coming in as well, and I'll start giving those out to you guys as well. Coming up next, we're going to have Liam and Anthony Gorman on the show. It's a very interesting story. It's a real heart pulls on the heartstrings type story. Liam, Anthony, are you guys on with us now?
Yeah, how you doing, sir?
Doing outstanding. Is Liam there?
Yeah, Liam's here bouncing off the walls.
Okay, outstanding. Maybe we can get him on the phone with us here in just a minute.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know where to start on this. Now, I know Liam has a special medical condition. Is that right?
Yeah. Liam's my son. He's my only son. He's going to be 6 in July. At 15 months old, Liam was diagnosed with an extremely rare form of bone marrow failure. It's called diamond black fan anemia. It's named after the two physicians who diagnosed it ultimately. There are less than 600 people on the planet who have been diagnosed with this. The diagnosis itself is a diagnosis of exclusion. They basically have to rule everything else out first. And basically what it is his body, his bone marrow is in failure and his body doesn't produce any red blood cells. And for anybody with just fundamental, like, high school knowledge, the red blood cells are what carry oxygen to every cell in your entire body, to all your living tissues and everything. And without red blood cells, quite simply, I mean, you would die. And because he doesn't produce any red blood cells, he is on a chronic transfusion schedule where every 2 to 3 weeks he has to receive blood transfusions in order to survive, basically. One moment, sir. Daddy's on the phone, okay? Give me one moment, sir.
Oh, he's a cutie. So he has to go in how often now to get these transfusions?
Depending on what his levels are, because he has to get blood draws and stuff like that, depending on what his levels are, on average, every 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, that's brutal. And I've seen some of the pictures here in the thread in the New York home,
New York hometown forum. We've got a lot of support from the guys out there. They've been outstanding.
Oh, and he's such a cute kid, man. That smile in those eyes, man, I'll tell you what. And to see him having to go through those transfusions. Now, so you guys put together, he's not the only child that has to go through blood transfusions. There's all kinds of kids for different reasons that have to go through these transfusions, right?
Yeah, and not only transfusions. I mean, you know, one of the most heart-wrenching things is to have your child go through something like that. But, you know, it's not only that, but when you walk into a pediatric oncology, like cancer center or hematology center, and you're sitting in a treatment room, and, you know, your son's there, he's knocked out because he's sedated for the transfusion. And then you look to your left, and there's, like, you know, a 9-year-old girl with liver cancer, a 6-month-old kid with a brain tumor, and they're getting chemotherapy and radiation therapies and stuff like that. It's just absolutely gut-wrenching. It's something really difficult to deal with. But because they have to get IV sticks, what the hospitals do is, you know, they get Band-Aids after they get their IVs done and stuff. And it was a couple transfusions ago. It wound up being a knee-jerk reaction. What we did was they ran out of character Band-Aids, you know, like SpongeBob Band-Aids and things like
that.
So Liam was incredibly distressed by this because he had just a regular Band-Aid. And it was so stressful for him that, you know, just after all of that, that little piece of comfort of having a character Band-Aid. And the rationale behind it was the hospital basically, you know, fiscal, you know, responsibility, all this other stuff, they just didn't want to allot the extra money to buying character Band-Aids, and they just bought regular Band-Aids. And I lost my mind. I was like, are you crazy? Like, you know, the nurse felt horrible about it. It wasn't her decision, you know?
Right.
And it was such a knee-jerk reaction. I went home, and I just started doing, like, angry typing, you know, on Facebook, on ARFCOM and stuff. And I was just like, you know, I want to put something together where we can just collect character Band-Aids to make these kids more comfortable at the end of their transfusion. And in a matter of weeks, I just got flooded with an incredible amount. I mean, my PM box blew up, my email account blew up, and I just got so many positive responses. Is it okay if I just thank a couple of people directly?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Direct Action from ARFCOM was like an integral part of this, just bumping every day and really getting a lot of people involved. And there were just, like, so many others, but, you know, like Direct Action, MAG-162, a bunch of other guys were just incredible in the amount of support and what they were doing and just the personal notes and everything. And when we came to the hospital, literally, you know, a couple weeks after not having a character Band-Aid, we literally walked in with over 500 boxes of character Band-Aids. And not just like SpongeBob and Dora the Explorer. I mean, there were some really like cool Band-Aids out there, like pickle Band-Aids and crime scene tape and all this like incredible stuff. And the kids just lit up because they just...
And there was Spooky Baby.
Yeah. There was, you know, all these different Band-Aids. And Liam, of course, in true ARFCOM form was... wanted bacon Band-Aids, and of course from now on he's got his own private stash of bacon Band-Aids. So, you know, it was pretty incredible. So, you know, we're like, now what we're trying to do is we actually we donated some to the pediatric center where he's at, some to Snyder's Children's Hospital, and what we're looking to do is try to do this on not only just the New York-centric thing, like for Liam specific. I'd like to take this, you know, to just a global level. Just let's get this on a national level where even if you can't do it, if you don't know anybody, just everybody just collect the stuff and just, you know, do a local drive and bring it to your local pediatric, you know, cancer center or your pediatric hematology center. Just to make it comfortable for these kids, you know? So.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how just something as small as a little Band-Aid like that to a kid, it means so much, especially when they go through so much pain.
Yeah.
But just so all my listeners know, Anthony is an ARFCOMer. He's been around since at least April of 2005. His screen name is Paramedic, P-E-R-I-M-E-D-I-K, paramedic. So he's one of the boys. He's one of us. He's been around a whole lot longer than I have. And this cause is just awesome. And I'm going through some of these pictures on the hometown thread, looking at some of the stuff where ARFCOMers have already stepped up and sent just big, huge shipments of Band-Aids. And I'm looking
at
Hot
Wheels, it's been incredible.
Scooby-Doo, and
the FedEx and UPS guys hate me now, you know. They hated me with all my reload and stuff. Now they hate me even more. At least these packages are light.
So can people still get in contact with you at the, let me make sure I have the website here, the redcell911@verizon.net?
Yeah, that's my personal email address. My goal was actually today to try and set up the P.O. box, but I just got wrapped up in like 10,000 things, so... tomorrow morning, I'm actually going to go to my local post office. I'm going to set up a post office box for Liam to do Band-Aid drops, just so it's not being sent to a home address and 10,000 people out in the world have a home address.
Right.
Just set up a P.O. box and just have them drop ship to the P.O. box. And, you know, we'll make trips to the, you know, to Snyder's, to the baby hospitals, wherever we can. You know, we get a few hundred. And I'll just, you know, contact them, come with Liam, we'll drop them off, we'll take pictures and things, and just really want to, you know, just get it out there, and you know, it's gut-wrenching, you know. Just even if I remove myself, you know, I've been a paramedic for years and years, and pediatrics are one of the most difficult things to deal with, and sometimes you just feel helpless. You know, in EMS and 911 dealing with pediatric, it's just like you really have to maintain your composure and, you know, your nerves start going through the roof. And then if you're a parent, it becomes even more gut-wrenching because you think to yourself, wow, you know, if my kid was in this situation. So to really try and get that across to people that, you know, this is someone's child, and to make them more comfortable just by something as simple as a $3 box of Band-Aids. I mean, you know, the battery on my camera died, and I wish it didn't, but the faces of these kids when they lit up just because they had, you know, a Dora the Explorer Band-Aid, you know, and it's like, oh, cool, I get the Dora Band-Aid, or, you know, I get a crayon Band-Aid or something like that. It caps off a painful day for them, and it gives them something like, you know, 100 boxes of Band-Aids in front of them, and they can pick whatever they want. It gives them control of a situation that they really have no control over, you know.
Right,
so
right, and that's a huge thing.
It really does help. It goes a long way.
You know, I can barely relate to this situation. I just had a son a couple of weeks ago, and he got an infection.
Oh, God bless.
Thank you. He got an infection after he was born, and I remember watching them put the IVs in him while he was in newborn ICU, and,
yeah.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, that – if you're a parent and you have to watch your kid go through that, and my son was only in there for a week and it took just about everything I had, I just cannot imagine the courage it takes for a kid like Liam, 5 years old, to have to know what he's going in for and know what's there waiting for him, know those sharp, pointy things are in there waiting for him. But, you know, he goes in there, he's got this just million-dollar smile on him every picture I've seen, and just what a trooper. I just, man, you've got to be proud.
Some days he's awesome about it. Some days it's like, all right, buddy, we got to go. We got to get your boo-boo today. And he's like, okay, let's go. And it's flawless. And then there, you know, there was one particular time, and it made me laugh, like, out loud. It was hysterical. We went in, and he's like, I don't want the boo-boo today. And I was like, well, buddy, you have to get it. You got to get your blood. And he's like, no, daddy, you first. And I was like, oh, man, he called me out. And then, like, the nurse laughed, and I said, okay. She set up. She started an IV on me, drew my blood, put it in the tubes, everything like that, bandaged me up and everything, and then I looked at Liam, and I said, well, Liam, it's your turn now, and without missing a beat, he just went, God damn it, and he put his hand out, and, like, he thought he was going to get away with it, but he was just, he got caught, and then, but he took it like a champ. It was so funny.
That is a great story right there. What are the chances of us saying hi to Liam for a minute?
Yeah, sure. Hold on 1 second. Liam, there's a bunch of my buddies. I want you to say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Liam. How are you doing today?
How you doing, buddy?
Good.
You're doing good? I saw your pictures on the internet, and we're going to try to get as many Band-Aids sent out to you guys as we can, okay?
Okay.
We know you're a really brave kid. I want you to keep that really beautiful smile you have on you, okay?
Boo-boo, okay. Very, very good, better.
Ah, he's right. He gave me the phone back.
Oh, what a man. That just tears at your heartstrings. So, for all the ARF Karmers out there listening, I want you guys to know you can just pick up a few boxes of Band-Aids if you want. Go out and get some character Band-Aids. Get some really cool, get some cool ones maybe that you think no one else has sent in. And let's try to see if ARF Karmers can send in the coolest Band-Aids for this Band-Aid drive that all these kids can get. And then when you get them, get hold of Anthony. His email address is redcell911@verizon.net. His screen name on ARFCOM is Paramedic, P-E-R-I-M-E-D-I-K. You can send him an IM. He'll tell you how to get the Band-Aids out. I really want you guys to step up for this. This is something for some of the bravest kids in the world. I mean, we get Navy SEALs on here. We get snipers on here. We get Marines. We get war reporters on here. But I'll tell you what, these kids are some of the bravest people.
You know, when I get the P.O. box set up and, you know, link it to the hometown form and to a couple of sites that we got set up. So, you know, get all that set up. So.
And what we'll do is we'll try to get a post set up and general discussion tacked up at the top with all that. Once you get that P.O. box address set up, make sure you let me know. And we'll get that put up in GD so everybody that drops by GD, they can take a look at it as well.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I appreciate the support.
Not a problem. And then we'll have you on again here in a couple months. Let us know how the Band-Aid drive's going. Give us an
update
on Liam, some of the other kids.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, with the parents' permissions, you know, I'll take pictures of some of the other kids and stuff. And, you know, they teach me something new about myself every time I go in. And it's just amazing to see just, like, how brave they are. You know, when it's actually being done. I mean, they cry, and then they realize this stuff's got to get done. And, you know, it's amazing to see how resilient they are. And, you know, I thank God and I count my blessings every day that Liam's with me and that, you know, that he is, maintaining. He's just a normal kid. He bounces off the walls. He loves school. He loves to go fishing. He can't wait to go, you know, duck hunting with daddy and stuff. So he's just a normal
great.
Kid. If I didn't tell you anything, you know, that he had to get transfusions, you would just never know. You know, so I count my blessings for that he's not, like, debilitated or anything. So, you know, thank God, you know.
That's great. That's fantastic. Anthony and Liam Gorman, everybody. God bless you guys, both of you, Anthony. Hang in there.
All right, sir. Thank you for your time, everybody.
Absolutely. Stay courageous for that young, and wow, what a great story, everybody. I encourage all you ARFCOMers, go check out the Band-Aid drive. It's in the New York Hometown Forum. You can't miss it. I'm sure it's on the front page over there. All the links are in the Radio Free ARFCOM discussion threads, both the Radio Free ARFCOM forum and in the general discussion forum. Just a great story. Man. It tugs on your heartstrings to look at some of these pictures of these kids. There's pictures of Liam getting his transfusions, man, and there's one where he's just kind of laying there. He's got his transfusion in his arm, and you know he's just thinking, oh, I just want to get this thing over with. Just want to get this darn thing done. And, oh, man, what a brave kid. Knowing he has to go in for that, you know, every couple of weeks, a couple of times a month, he knows he's got to go in and get stuck by the needle, and he just, what courage. That's just inspirational. We're going to have Neil Puckett on here in just a couple of minutes once Seth can get him online. My rant of the week here real quick before we go on is, ha, 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 to Mr. Bennett here in Utah. Got kicked out of office by the Republican little convention they had here. He didn't even make it into the primary. We're talking about an incumbent. And this is what happens when you tell your constituents, I'm only going to run for 2 terms. I will not run for more than 2 terms. And then you get to the end of your 3rd term and people are like, you know what, you need to get out of here. We got Bennett down. Now, if we can just get rid of Matheson here in Utah, all my Utah listeners, and then we get rid of Mr. Hatch up there at the top, we get rid of those guys, I think we will be in great shape. There's a lot of great conservative young blood here in Utah and all over the country with the Tea Party movement. It's outstanding. The Tea Party is actually starting to show some tangible effects. It's not just demonstrations. It's not just people waving flags and yelling slogans. We're actually having an effect on the system, and that is very, very heartening considering everything else that's going on. Just waiting for Seth to get Neil Puckett online. He's going to talk about Petty Officer McCabe's trial that ended last Thursday. It started on Tuesday, I believe. They went through jury selection, had the trial. They ended up, I think, with 7 jurors, I believe. Maybe it was 5. 5 or 7 jurors. He's going to come on and give us an AAR. I'm really excited about this because I've got a couple of questions that I didn't ask him last time. I wanted to talk to him about this time. Also, Sheriff Mack is coming on later. If you don't know who Sheriff Mack is, look up sheriffmack.com. I'm sure you've heard about the book, The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope. He is the one that wrote that book, and it's an interesting book. I've only read excerpts from it, but I did read the original article that the book was based off, and it talks about how the county sheriff is the true the law enforcement power of the county. He resides above the feds. He resides above any city law enforcement, and he can decide what laws actually really do get enforced in a county. It's going to be a really interesting interview. What's that, Seth? Looks like we are... Okay, still trying to get a hold of him. He'll be on. I sent him an email earlier today. He told me he would be on with us, so I'm not worried about it at all. We'll fire another one off to him here real quick just to make sure he knows we're trying to get hold of him. I did tell him it would be a little later, so he's probably waiting maybe 10 minutes or so before he comes on. A couple of other things I wanted to talk about before we maybe get any farther. If anybody out there is involved in EOD, and I put a thread up about this a couple of days ago, explosive ordnance disposal. If you are involved in that now, if that currently is your job, either in the military or in law enforcement, please get hold of me because I want to do a show talking about EOD, and I want to get a couple experts. I've had people send me a couple of names, and I'll get hold of those people. But just so the listeners know, if you know somebody out there or you yourself are involved in explosive ordnance disposal, get hold of me. Send me an IM. radio_free_arfcom, or you can send me an email at radio_free_arfcom@ar15.com. I want to talk to you, or I want to talk to your friend that you know is in EOD. I have a bunch of questions about that, and I think it would make a really interesting show topic if we can get us an expert on that really knows the ins and outs, the nuts and bolts of it. I want to talk about some of these terrorist bombs that have failed and talk about a couple of other things. Also, if you have a friend who is involved in offshore drilling, we know the big, huge mess that's been made by British Petroleum down in the Gulf of Mexico. If you know somebody who is actively currently involved in offshore drilling, it can be on any level. It doesn't have to be someone high up. It can just be, you know, just a regular Joe out there drilling. Please contact me. I want to do a little show segment about that and talk about the safety issues involved and how safe it is. I mean, it's been 40 years since there's been any major accident out in offshore drilling, and I'm just so scared to death that Obama's going to use this to just end all offshore drilling. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see how that goes. The last thing I wanted to talk about before we got any further is we are going to have some ARFCOM-endorsed candidates for Senate, and we're going to try to do a fundraiser for them later this year. If you know some candidates running for Congress for Congress later this year, please let me know. They have to be very pro Second Amendment. So far we've got Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and a couple others. Scott Taylor from Virginia is one. And, there's one more. His name is slipping my mind, from Missouri. We've got 3 so far. We're going to try to get 5 or 6, that Radio Free ARFCOM is going to endorse. So if you guys know any candidates that are running in your districts that are very pro-Second Amendment, pro-AR-15, pro-Black Rifle, send me the information. We'll get in touch with their campaign headquarters and see what we can do to get them on our list. And we're going to try to get some really cool prizes for this. We're going to raffle off a bunch of prizes and see what we can come up with. I've got a couple of contacts that I've talked to get maybe a couple of really nice rifles that we can raffle off, and we'll make the tickets really inexpensive, you know, $5 or $10, so you guys can have a chance literally to win yourself a $5 or $10 rifle. Let me check real quick with Seth, make sure, see if we've gotten Mr. Puckett online yet. Just a second here. He should be on with us shortly. He was scheduled for 5:30 to 5:40. So he'll be on right here shortly. We're going to take a real quick break, And we'll be right back, hopefully with Neil Puckett, the attorney for Petty Officer McCabe. Okay, and we're back live here at Radio Free ARFCOM. We weren't able to get hold of Mr. Puckett. I'm sure he will contact us here in a few minutes. But we have Sheriff Richard Mack on. He is the premier guest of the show, and I'm really excited to have Sheriff Mack on. How are you today, Sheriff Mack?
Well, I'm doing really well. It's a beautiful day in Arizona, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Now, I understand you are a BYU guy. I am a University of Utah guy myself, but I think we can overcome that for the sake of the interview, right?
Well, I will tell you one thing. I'm not one of those fanatic fans that says I always cheer against Utah no matter what. No way. If they're not playing BYU, I'm totally for University of Utah. I really am glad that they've done well, and they've brought a lot of attention to the positive force of football and basketball there, and the great Mountain West Conference.
That's great. That's how I am, too. I'm not one of those guys either. If BYU's not playing us, then I want them to win because it's just great for the conference.
Sure. It's great for the state. It's great for the conference, and it just shows people that there's something besides out here in the West. There's something besides the Pac-10, and I love it when BYU beats even my home state colleges of U of A or ASU.
All right, but don't say that too loud, though. Don't say that
no,
too loud.
I don't, because I am fans of U of A and ASU, but not when they play Mountain West Conference, or and especially not when they play Utah or BYU.
So before we get into the meat and potatoes of the interview, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, how you got started in law enforcement? I understand that you've literally worn almost every hat that a law enforcement officer can wear.
That's true. The only thing I didn't do is I was never on a SWAT team, but when I was hostage negotiator, we cross-trained with SWAT, and so I've had all the training and did everything in law enforcement that was imaginable, murder investigations, bicycle thefts, and everything in between. And my career started at Provo Police Department in Utah. While I was going to BYU, I was working my way through college as a part-time meter maid.
and
I wrote a lot of tickets, and I've had to repent for that since then, because I really think that most tickets are unjustified. And so I actually went to BYU to try to become an FBI agent. My father retired from the FBI in 1974. I graduated from BYU in 78, tried to get in the FBI. It just never worked out. And so I stayed with the Provo Police Department and hired on full-time with them in 1979. And I was starting to question law enforcement and the drug war after I did a one-year assignment as an undercover narcotics officer. And that isn't just mean I was working vice. That means I was totally under. I couldn't go to the police station. I couldn't go anywhere with my family in public. Could not go to church. Could not, you know, I was a prisoner in Provo,
yeah,
in Utah County for a little over, about a year's time. And I started in January and finished in September, and then had court cases that lasted about another year after that. But for the most part, it was a one-year assignment, and I thoroughly hated it. But it actually started me questioning, because having been able to live within the drug culture, and I will tell you, I almost caught Jim McMahon. Not afraid to mention the name, because I almost did.
Oh,
he was a real partier, and I really liked him as a quarterback, and I really liked him at BYU, although he seemed to disparage BYU quite a bit. But, no one forced him to go there, but I thought he was great. I always liked him and thought he was a great quarterback. But anyway, he was a partier. And, but after that, I tell you, I just have to admit that I didn't like some of the things we were doing in law enforcement, and I started studying and looking at things, and ran into something that I think every cop in this country should run into, and that is my oath of office. And I've been preaching about the oath of office since, I'd say, well back in the early 80s, that police officers and most public officials in this country swear an oath to uphold and defend and obey the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the state wherein they work, and nobody keeps it. We don't talk about it. We don't train in it. We don't read the Constitution. We don't understand the Constitution. We don't push the Constitution within our departments and in our everyday work. And I would really love, and I have loved in the past, to ask cops, how is it that you keep your oath of office? And you always get an amazing answer with that. Anywhere from, I don't have to keep my oath, I just do whatever I'm told, to, I do whatever the Supreme Court says. And, you know, it's kind of funny that we swear an oath to uphold and defend this document, this, basis and foundation for freedom in America, and yet we never have read it, and we, assume no moral responsibility to fulfill that oath whatsoever. That really got to me, to the point where I almost quit my job over it. And instead of quitting my job, I decided that I would study and understand the Constitution. Went to a class at University of Utah with the instructor, Dr. W. Cleon Skousen, and 240 cops. 240 cops at that training seminar to learn the Constitution. And it was the most amazing training I've ever had in law enforcement. I was converted to the Constitution, and I promised myself at that two-day seminar that I would never be on the wrong side again. And after that, I was promoted to corporal and sergeant and detective. Things were going great, and then my wife and I, for some crazy reason, decided to move back home to Arizona and run for county sheriff. I was elected in 1988 and reelected in 1992. And then in 1994, I was the first sheriff in the United States to file a lawsuit against the Clinton administration to stop the overreach, the intervention, and the downright criminality and unconstitutionality of the Brady Bill. And a few other sheriffs joined the lawsuit. Sheriff Prince from Montana and I ended up at the United States Supreme Court together. And on June 27, 1997, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the Brady Bill, in part, was unconstitutional. The part that was unconstitutional, though, was the most far-reaching and broad, powerful decision, a monumental decision that I could have ever imagined. Because now it says everything that Barack Obama is trying to do to us, that every bit of what he's trying to do is unconstitutional, and that, quote, state legislatures are not subject to federal direction, and the federal government cannot compel the states to enact or enforce a federal regulatory program.
Oh.
Now, the question remains, is nationalized socialistic health care a federal regulatory program? And if it is, which it sure sounds like to me it is, not rocket science, that the states do not have to accept it, participate in it, or go along with it in any shape, manner, or form.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the health care issue. I noticed earlier today that President Obama put out another public service announcement touting the great benefits of this health care reform, and all I could think of was, you know, this thing passed a month ago. If it's so great, why is he still trying to sell it to everybody?
Yeah, if it was so great, then why are there 15 states, now 17, that want to file a lawsuit? But I need to tell you, every one of those states simply needs to read my case, because if they do, they'll see that we've already beat it. There is nothing in that case that won't apply to what they want to sue over. And quite frankly, Barack Obama might be doing that simply because he's looked at the polls. And so he's still trying to convince the American people and states to go along, because this is going to make and break his legacy as president, which hopefully will only be a very short four-year term. And he's not going to, you know, if this fails, if the states opt out, his legacy as president is going to be extremely scarred and bruised. And it's going to be the only thing he's going to be able to look back on and say, well, at least I did that. And quite frankly, Barack Obama, anybody could do what he's been doing as president. I mean, it's taken no talent whatsoever to spend more money and to create a socialistic government. I don't see anything except that he could say that he did better than George Bush, except spend more money.
Yeah,
and I think it's absurd that he's getting away with it so much from the nationalized press.
Yeah, it is disgusting. So you ended up getting out of office, out of being a sheriff, and then your latest move was you wrote the book, The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope.
Yeah.
And can you kind of tell our listeners a little bit about this, about The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope, what's in it, and you've actually went on a campaign or crusade and got it in the hands of every single county sheriff in America. Is that correct?
That is correct. A lot of good people joined the grassroots movement that I had created, and it was really a dream come true. We had about 32 states done, and then a good brother and patriot from Texas asked me how many states we lacked, and he donated the last several thousand dollars to get those out to every sheriff in the country. So I would safely say that 95 to 99% of the sheriffs in this country now have received it. I think there's a few secretaries who have prevented the book from getting actually to their sheriff's hands, but most sheriffs do have the book, and right now we're trying to get it out to every county attorney and county commissioner and deputy and peace officer, and of course every citizen needs to read this book. And I'll tell you why. Because it is irrefutable evidence. And I connect all the dots that proves once and for all that the sheriff is indeed the ultimate law enforcement authority in his county. He is the only elected law enforcement officer in the United States. He serves by, for, and of the people, the true power source in this country. He is not a bureaucrat. He does not answer to a bureaucrat, as does the chief of police. And I'm not disparaging the chief of police. I hope the chief of police in every city in this country will likewise keep his oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution. But the chief of police reports to the city council, not to the people. He reports to the town manager, not to the people. And I hope he still will understand that his oath of office is something that he owes to the people. But the sheriff reports only to the people. He does not have any other boss. And that's the way it should be. And he has sworn an oath to protect and defend their constitutional rights. What I point out in the book, and I ask the question, Sheriff, will you stand against tyranny? Will you stand against the criminality of the IRS? Will you stop the land grab? Will you interpose? Will you put yourself in the way and practice the theory and doctrine of interposition to protect your citizens from being victimized by our own federal government? Now, I have put in the book and on my website that the greatest threat to our God-given constitutional American liberty is our own federal government. The question is, who will stand in the way? Who will be there to protect and defend the rights of the individual from abusive government, from tyrannical government? And if it's not the sheriff of this country, then I don't get it. I guess I'm just coming in from Mars. Because it's exactly the way the program was established. The people depend on the checks and balances of local officials. My case proves that local officials have the authority and the responsibility to stand against the federal government. And so I've put it all there in the book. It's only a 50-page booklet. And I think a la Thomas Paine's Common Sense, it's in there. It's having an impact. It's making a difference. And I guarantee you that if we have the sheriffs of this country standing as if it were the army to set other men free, that this Tea Party movement and this movement to take back our country and our Constitution will be both effective and peaceful. And I think that's an amazing miracle to achieve. And so everyone listening to this program, I urge you, I beg you, to get a copy of this book and make sure that you ask your sheriff if he's read it. But you need to read it as well. And we're going to have it out on CD form real quickly, because I've had some people that asked for it in that manner. Some blind people have asked for it, and some people who simply don't have the time to read but do have time to pop a CD in their vehicle. We're going to have that available, so be watching my website for that announcement, and we'll probably try to get it on your show announced again. And plain and simply, everybody needs to know the truth about this, and it is a solution to what's going on. I don't see any other solution unless somebody still thinks that there's some sort of solution in Washington, D.C. But I think that's a joke. I think politicians in Washington, D.C. are a joke. And I think that's the most corrupt place on the face of the planet. They're not going to restore freedom and liberty to this country. And but we can do it county by county and state by state.
Yeah, your message is very inspiring. It's just so refreshing to hear people like you. And we had Sheriff Joe on a couple of months ago. It's just refreshing to hear law enforcement officers like that talk about liberty and freedom and stuff like that. The big story, you know, in the last couple of weeks has been right down there in your home state. The immigration bill, and
yep.
People have complained that it's going to lead to profiling and all that, but I actually read the bill, and yeah. From what I understand is that you can't, it doesn't even come into effect if you've already broken the law, aside from being here illegally. You have to go ahead
Correct.
And break another law and come in contact with a law enforcement officer before it even becomes an issue. You're down in the thick of it. You were the sheriff down there in one of the most southeastern counties in Arizona. Tell us about the impact it's had down there and where you think it will go. Do you think it will be overturned by a court or anything like that?
I don't think it'll be overturned because it simply reinforces laws that are already on the books. You know, I've always been concerned about police officers going outside their authority. They can certainly do that with this bill. They can do that with a lot of other bills. The Patriot Act is 10 times more unconstitutional and abusive of rights and freedoms than this bill would dream of coming close to. But yet, not too many people are saying how the Patriarch is Hitleric in form. But we get people like the Phoenix Suns general manager and others saying that this is a Gestapo-like thing, a Gestapo-like law. That's just absurd. It's ridiculous. And people are really looking like, it's like the Hispanic and La Raza groups were waiting for something to attack. There's really nothing legally or lawfully to attack here. What I really like most about, though, excuse me. What I really like about this law primarily is that it shows in no uncertain terms that the federal government has failed to do its job. And now the states are so frustrated that they're having to come up with laws of their own. Holder, Attorney General Holder, Barack Obama, all sorts of other people are now coming out and saying, well, this law is wrong. Well, we admit that there's a huge problem that Washington, D.C. has not addressed or taken care of. Well, let me be very clear here. This is a huge failure of both the Bush administration, the Republicans in Washington, D.C., the Obama administration, and the Democrats in Washington, D.C., to take care of a problem that has been festering and biting us on the backside now for over 20 years. Neither one of them wanted to address it because of their own selfish political agendas, proving once and for all that they are willing to compromise our security, our national security, our personal rights and freedoms for their own preservation and their own jobs and their own elections and their own politics. You cannot pretend that 4,500 young Americans have given their lives in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and then come back here and tell us that, well, yeah, we're having a war on terror, but we're not going to secure our borders between Canada and Mexico, especially Mexico. And yes, terrorists have entered our country from the southern border of Mexico. And yet our government refuses to address that problem because they're so afraid that the Hispanics might not vote for them in the next election. That is exactly the truth. And I love Mexico. I love Latin America. My degree was in Latin American studies. I speak fluent Spanish. My family and I love to go to Mexico. But I'll tell you what, my Hispanic friends here in Arizona do not support illegal immigration, nor do I. It is against the law, and the state of Arizona had every right to pass this law.
Yep, I don't think there's any question the federal government has just dropped the ball on this for the last 15 to 20 years, and the floodgates have been open, and I've seen some of the cameras. People put hidden trail cams up, and you see videos of just endless streams of people coming over the border. You guys actually had a sheriff's deputy get shot there last week by a group of illegals.
Yeah, why isn't somebody protesting that?
Yeah, and you know, it was literally hardly anywhere. It was just, Fox was almost the only news organization that covered it. It was amazing.
Yeah. Why hasn't somebody done a protest about the rancher who was murdered by illegal aliens on the border? These farmers and ranchers and families that live along the border of Mexico in Arizona have had their homes burglarized, vandalized, property stolen, trash strewn all over their land. Nobody is standing and protecting them. Nobody is fighting for them. Nobody is having a protest for them. But if you make a law that simply supports the existing federal laws that the federal government refuses to enforce, then all of a sudden there's all these protests and people yelling that we're all racist. Well, that's absurd, and I'll tell you what. I find it just as offensive that people call me a racist as some others do of racial slurs, being called the N-word or other things. I take it very, I think it's very offensive for the media or these other groups to call Arizonans or people like me who believe in the law and the Constitution and freedom and securing our borders. They call us racists because we believe in having a secure border. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, racist has kind of become the term of the day, the term du jour, as it were, for the,
yeah,
for the left. It's like anybody who disagrees with anything this administration is doing at all, or supports any immigration reform or any immigration controls, excuse me, is a racist. And it,
yeah,
you're right. You hit the nail on the head when you said being called a racist is just as offensive as being called any racial slur. And
right.
I will say this, the one thing that's going to come out of it, I think, of just this liberal use of the word racist, is it's going to lose its bite. It's going to lose its meaning, and it's just going to become another, also ran word. No matter how offensive it is, you use it enough in front of people, and people just become desensitized to it. But
yeah,
I absolutely agree with you, Sheriff Mack. The word, it's as offensive as any racial slur out there. Being called a racist, it's just as offensive as anything. You spoke a little bit about the border. Tell me about the Minutemen down there and your view on them.
Well, I think they did a great job of exposing the problem. And they got a lot of good press. You know, some of those people I've met, and I think they did a fantastic job. It's easy, though, to expose that the federal government has failed to do their job. The Constitution does require the federal government to protect our borders. And I really appreciate the grassroots effort, and that just also shows the power of the people. They brought this problem to the forefront. And who was it? Just a bunch of grassroots people, a bunch of grassroots, common, ordinary citizens who are activists and trying to help our country. They did a great job exposing this problem and exposing the corruption of Washington, D.C. politics. And I'm proud of them for doing what they did. And this is another thing along with what I've put in the book, and that is that it's up to us to save our country. If you're still looking to Washington, D.C. to save our country, then I've got beachfront property for you in Omaha. You know,
yeah,
it's not going to happen in Washington, D.C., folks. You've got to look at the solution. And I'm proud to say that I'm part of a movement that expresses a very valid and quick solution, and that is the SS solution, state sovereignty. And if we'll get governors and local legislators, county commissioners, county attorneys, and sheriffs across this country and in your county to stand for freedom, we really will take this country back county by county.
Yeah, and I agree. It's got to happen county by county, representative by representative. We've got to get the right people in office. I really like what the Tea Party movement has done.
Me too.
We've got it here in Utah. I'm sure you're well aware. Bob Bennett, one of the rhinos, one of the more liberal Republicans, was just ousted,
yeah,
to the point where he will not even be able to run unless he runs a write-in campaign, which will surely fail. The Tea Party movement has been a great grassroots movement. And it's heartening to see these movements come along. I don't know. We've still got 985 days of Barack Obama, no matter what we do. And I am,
yeah,
scared to death what this guy could do. You talked about state sovereignty. A few weeks ago here on the show, we had some people from the Texas Secede Organization, which is a big organization promoting Texas secession. Do you foresee a time when states would actually secede from the Union?
Yeah, I see that as a possibility, and they certainly, I was on the Chris Matthews Hardball show, and he really got mad at me, or, you know, said I was a fringe guy because I talked about secession. But this is the thing. It's not in my book. I don't recommend that states secede. I don't recommend that you move to New Zealand either. But you have the right to do that. The states also have the right to do it. If you gotta look back, at this historical perspective of what we're talking about. Who formed the federal government? Well, the 13 original states, of course. They did not form a federal government to become their boss or to run every facet of our lives, to control our land, our natural resources, our water, our health care, our children, our education, and basically just micromanage every facet of our lives. That was never intended, to have an IRS micromanaging our finances, forcing us to manage our own financial affairs for them, report it to them, and then if we fail to do it correctly or how they see it, then we go to prison, and we have debtors' prisons. Nobody should be going to prison because of the IRS, except for maybe IRS agents who continuously victimize citizens in this country. And this is just so mind-boggling to me that we have allowed these things to occur in this great country. Bob Bennett dug his own grave politically.
Absolutely.
For years and years, people were warning him and telling him to stop being a rhino. He was one of the reasons that that word got invented. And Orrin Hatch isn't too far behind him. And I really appreciate what the Tea Party movement and this resurgence of American liberty did to get Bob Bennett out of the way. It's really too bad that he had to learn this lesson the hard way. But that's exactly what a lot of politicians have got to see. And what I have said hundreds of times, that the Tea Party movement is not about going back to the Republican Party. It's about going back to our Constitution. And that's a huge difference. And so the Republican Party better be watching this just as well as the Democrats. The lesson of Scott Brown winning in Massachusetts, not that Scott Brown is an exemplary conservative, because he's not. But it was the Tea Party movement that said, we're going to get a Republican in here just to show you that this long-held seat by one of the worst Democrats in and most liberal Democrats in American history, that we can replace him with the best Republican we have at hand. And for Massachusetts, that's a huge step. For Bob Bennett to lose in Utah, that's a huge step. And the lesson in both states remains the same. You better follow the Constitution. You better keep your oath of office, because we're coming and the American people are stepping up. We're waking up, and we're not going to vote for any more rhinos or anybody else that won't follow the principles that this country was founded upon. So here we come. And what happened in Massachusetts and Utah in recent months is just an indication that the American people are taking this very seriously, and the rest of these politicians better wake up.
Yeah, it's a great barometer of where people stand and the views of people, and I can't believe everyone's just woken up like they have. November is going to be so exciting to see some of these guys get booted out on their heads, and there's going to be some surprises. There's going to be some guys that think they have it locked up, and
yeah,
they're going to be very surprised when those ballots get counted and they're out on their heads.
Yeah,
You spoke about the drug war, and it's a hot topic here on AR15.com. It seems like every other week there's a thread talking about should drugs be legal, should drugs be legal, should drugs be legal. You worked undercover, you've worked in law enforcement, you've worked down there in Arizona where one of the main pipelines of illegal narcotics comes through.
Yeah.
And you've said the drug war is a failure. What is the answer? Is there an answer aside from legalization?
First of all, there is no solution. Because as Abraham Lincoln said, laws of prohibition make crimes out of things that aren't crimes at all. So let's just be serious here about this. We are not going to keep people from using illegal drugs. You can't even keep drugs out of prisons. You know, so let's stop. What is it? What is the definition of insanity? Huh.
Doing the same thing, expecting different results.
Yeah. Let's just do the same thing over and over and over and expect different results. And law enforcement and politicians come back to you every year and say and promise, if you'll just give us more manpower and more money, we'll do better next year. We spend in this country $70 billion a year to fight drug abuse and drug trafficking. Even if we were to double our efforts next year and confiscate double the drugs we did this year and do double next year, it would still have no impact on people using drugs in this country. We have not prevented anyone from using drugs. If some high school student wants it, he can go get it at his high school tomorrow. Any high school in Utah, any high school in Arizona, it's there, it's available, and the kids know it, and so do I. And so this is the key issue here. Have we learned from history that prohibition does not work? It creates black markets. The roaring 20s of supposed dry counties and no alcohol in America created more crimes, more drinking, more alcohol cartels. It created the Al Capones in this country. It created the Kennedy family in this country. It created great wealth from those who broke the law, and it created a lot of death and destruction. Now we've done the same thing with marijuana, which is less harmful than alcohol, has probably over 1,000 domestic uses, or at least hemp does. We could solve the energy crisis. We could solve the environmental crisis, if there really is one, with the domestic uses and domesticizing marijuana or hemp. And for some idiotic reason, we've made it illegal just to touch the stuff. And now some states are waking up to that. But I will tell you emphatically, if it's to continue the present failed farce known as the drug war, as it is presently constituted, or legalization, or at least decriminalization across the board with all drugs, I'll take decriminalization any day. What we have done is counterproductive, stupid, and making the problem worse. And anybody who thinks that they have a right to point a gun at another individual and take his home away from him or put him in a prison in a box because he smokes marijuana is dead wrong. That is immoral for you to think that, and it does not go along with the agency, with the principles of agency that I've been taught my life, and it does not follow the maxims of fairness that America stands for, and that we allow people to run their own lives unless they hurt somebody else. And we've got to live and let live, and I have never used illicit drugs, and I don't condone it in any way, but I do not have the right to point a gun at you or any of my other neighbors and say, you can't use that, and I'm going to take your home and throw you in jail if you do. That is wrong, it's immoral, and it's completely counterproductive to what we were trying to do in this country.
We're on with Sheriff Richard Mack. Any of the listeners have questions, feel free to send me an IM, or you can call any of the numbers on the show. You know where the numbers are. Call in for any questions for this great American patriot. We're talking about the drug war, the failed drug war, and it's led to, and this is another thing we talk about a lot here on AR15.com, is the militarization of the police forces. You've got literally every city, county, parish has their own SWAT team. They're armed to the teeth. They've got bulletproof vests, the whole nine, fully auto weapons. Is this a result of the drug war, or is this something that now law enforcement agencies feel like they need to perpetuate the drug war just to keep the funding for these types of organizations?
Those are a lot of real good questions. I don't know. I've never really trusted law enforcement saying, give me more money, give me more manpower, give me our SWAT teams, give us our weapons, and we can end this drug trafficking, we can end this drug problem. First of all, it's used in campaigns by sheriffs and politicians all across this country that we're going to get tough on the drug war. Well, it's never happened. Like I said, I lived in the drug culture in Provo. There definitely is a drug culture there. Let's not kid ourselves. A lot of people there would like to kid themselves and pretend it doesn't exist. Substance abuse in Utah is extremely high, especially prescription drug abuse is extremely high in Utah, and I hate that one just as much. I hate doctors who prescribe medications that are addictive, and a lot of them are drug dealers. I'll say it right to their face. I'm not afraid to tell it to them either. I've talked to some doctors about it, and I've accused them of being the same. So we've got to address that problem as well as, it's okay if I take it from a doctor, but it's not okay if I buy it on the streets. That's absurd. And a lot of people buy into that philosophy. Well, I don't. And I think it's wrong and immoral no matter where you get your drugs, whether it's a doctor or street criminals or a high school student. I don't care. It's wrong. We've got to set the proper example and not use these things in our homes or from doctors. And we've got to address the issue that government and more government and Big Brother are not the answers to stopping drug abuse. And I say that as a 20-year veteran of the law enforcement and the drug war, and as a former undercover narcotics officer. And I also say that as a devout member of the LDS Church. And I just have to tell you that this thing about forcing people not to use drugs and what law enforcement has done with their SWAT vans and their SWAT teams, you know, back in the 80s, remember the movie, the television show SWAT?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, well, I'll tell you what, that did more harm than good, because every police agency in the country wanted their own SWAT team and their own SWAT van after that. And everybody has to justify, all the police agencies now have to justify having a SWAT team, so they send it out on mundane drug-related calls. And it's really an overreach and an excessive show of force. And if you put them out there, they're going to be out there doing things. And if you put guys and give them all a bunch of toys, they're going to play with those toys, and sometimes they're going to make mistakes. So you know, all of law enforcement across the country, I think, needs to look inward and admit that we've been part of the problem in this country. And not just point their fingers at the legislative and judicial branches saying, oh, well, we're doing everything great. We might be tasering people too often. But it's ridiculous to assume that everybody else is wrong except us. And I think we need to look at training. I think we need to look at academies right in the eye and look at how we're training and have police officers get trained in the oath of office and the Constitution and American patriotism and fundamentalism and American idealism, because you cannot bypass the basics and expect the rest is going to be handled and enforced properly. And so the police officers of this country need to become constitutional guards. And that's exactly the type of class I teach. And a matter of fact, I'm going to be doing a tour in Utah here this weekend.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday I'll be in Logan, and I think, Holiday in the Salt Lake, east side of Salt Lake, and then Moroni, I think, is the other one. But anyway, it's on my website, so if anybody listening in the Utah area would like to get to any of those events, just go to sheriffmack.com, and you'll see the advertisement there on speaking engagements.
We've got quite a few ARFCOMers, actually, that live in Utah, and I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of them showed up at your events. While we're on the topic of the SWAT teams and the war on drugs, and I've got one more question that in relation to that. Here on AR15.com, as well as the legalization of drugs and as well as the SWAT team questions, we talk a lot about no-knock warrants and their use. It seems like no-knock warrants now are being used. I mean, there's hundreds a day in America that are going on. These SWAT teams are kicking in doors left and right, and sometimes, you know, they get in there, and even if it is a high-level drug dealer, they get in there sometimes, and he's sold all his drugs. And they get there, and there's just a small quantity there. And then someone's dog gets shot, and kids get traumatized. And just what is your view on the no-knock warrant and its liberal use now?
Well, it's kind of funny you bring up the the dogs get shot, because that happens a lot with these SWAT raids and the drug raids. And it's really too bad that these types of things happen. But the first question you have to ask is, what happened to the drugs? Is there inside? Are these drug dealers getting inside information from somebody from the police departments? I mean, if they're getting rid of their stuff right before the raid happens, you have to wonder about that. I mean, that should make any department wonder if they have a leak within their own ranks, which I haven't seen that too much, to be quite honest. But it does exist, because that's exactly how drugs get into our prisons. People pay off prison guards and get drugs in there. In fact, you can get just about anything in there. And it's ridiculous that we continue to allow this to fester. We are the most drug-addicted country in the world, but we're supposed to be the most free country in the world. So it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive. And we need to all recognize that all three branches of government in our country today are off track. We need to look for solutions. We need to look inward. The solution is not ahead of us. The solution does not lie in more politics and policies and new programs. It lies behind us in finding the truth of what made America great and then embracing those principles. Now, as far as SWAT teams having problems and no-knock warrants, those are overused. I've been on those raids, the officer has to be able to testify to get his affidavit for the no-knock warrant that there are exigent circumstances. You know, if they're going to be flushing and getting rid of evidence, you know, I'm all for a no-knock warrant. However, those problems are simply associated with our stupidity in creating this problem in the first place.
Right.
Prohibition does not work. And I defy anyone to justify to me why I did and why any cop in this country should risk his life because of this drug war and because of these substances, because someone has marijuana or they're growing a marijuana in their backyard. And I should risk my life and risk their lives to have these types of drug raids when these people are simply not posing a danger to society. The real danger to society is police officers who fail to keep their oath and fail to see the problem that we have created.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum, as it were. I mean, they've got I don't even know if there is a solution to it at this point. I think we're almost so knee deep and neck deep in it. The cartels have so much money and so much vested interest in keeping the thing going as it is. I don't know what the answer is, but let's move along to another issue. Arizona's always had a strong Second Amendment foundation. The right to carry openly has been in Arizona for a long time. People have been able to open carry without a permit. Now, recently a law was passed that allows for concealed carry with no permit in Arizona. What is your view on that? What is the impact it will have, if any, on Arizona? I know it's become such a dangerous place that you almost have to let people carry concealed just because of how dangerous it is. Phoenix is the kidnap capital of the world. The murder rate has gone through the roof in the last 10 years. If you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, I guarantee you, this was a thrill for me. I've been an employee of Gun Owners of America. I've worked with the NRA, Second Amendment Foundation, just about every major gun group in the United States. The Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms is a very hot topic for me, and it should be for every American. And you cannot name me one school shooting where it couldn't have been stopped with someone, an honest, good, law-abiding American citizen, who might have been carrying a gun and putting a stop to these ridiculous slaughters that happen in our country. Maniacs and idiots and criminals are going to get guns. The only thing we can do is not make ourselves easy targets. And I want to tell every criminal in this country, my home is armed. If you come here, you will meet resistance. How about this, too? Should we tell every criminal in this country that schools are gun-free zones and they can, if anybody has a gun, they will not meet resistance inside there? That's the stupidest thing I think we've ever done. Even if it's a lie, we should tell or announce to every criminal that schools are armed, that guns are in strategic places, and that teachers are trained and administrative staff are trained, and they will defend the students if somebody comes in there with a gun. Tell me, even the most liberal person in the country, even the most socialistic person in our country, please tell me which one of those you think is a better idea. Yours, your idea of making gun-free zones has not worked. It's been a huge failure. And I am proud of Arizona and really proud of the legislature here that saw the Second Amendment for what it is, that we have a right to keep and bear arms. And it is not a crime if I'm carrying a gun and put it underneath my coat or if my wife puts one in her purse. That has created no crime, no threat, and harms no one. However, if a maniac does start shooting wherever we are, we will at least have a chance to shoot back. And having a fighting chance is a lot better than what these legislatures have done for Washington, D.C., and Detroit, and New York, and these other places in California where they don't allow citizens to even carry a gun in their car. And these laws are ridiculous. They're un-American. They're immoral. And they violate the supreme law of the land. And the legislature in Arizona has made Arizona now the third state which allows a citizen to carry a gun, concealed or open, anywhere without permits. And Vermont and Alaska are the other two. Statistics prove unquestionably that the states that have this type of carry have lower crime rates. Whether it does or not really doesn't make any difference because the Second Amendment is not based on criminal records. It's based on freedom. And that's the most important thing about the Second Amendment. The people are the ultimate power and the ultimate say. And if we are disarmed, we cannot have that ultimate power or the ultimate say. So I'm glad that Arizona finally woke up. I think it was a miracle. I never thought I'd see the day that this actually occurred here. But I'm proud to be in Arizona, and I'm proud that they did that. And I guarantee you, I will be making use of that, and quite honestly, I already was.
We've seen a slew of great laws come out of Arizona, the immigration law, the concealed carry law. They recently had a law come through making it so that towns and counties could not make harsher penalties for carrying a knife than what the state law is. It's just it's great to see Arizona pass all these very conservative, constitutional-type laws. Now, we've got Obama, and he's not even spoken about gun control, but there is a strong rumbling, an underground rumbling, especially on the Internet, about the Conference on the Arms Trade Treaty, and that there is going to be a treaty signed. It's going to be a backdoor way behind legislation to get some form of gun control, which will start out with, first, you won't be able to buy or sell guns, and then you won't be able to do personal transfers of weapons, and then there will be
right. You
know, forced registration, and eventually that will always lead to confiscation.
Yes.
If something like this is passed, do you see there being armed rebellion, riots in the streets type thing, or do you think that it will go through the courts and get struck down and we won't have to worry about that? Because I know for one that if they come to get the guns, there's enough people. If you just take ARFCOMers alone, there's enough people that it could get really ugly and really bloody.
It could, and this is why I have devised the book and promoted this state nullification philosophy, especially within the political subdivisions of the state, and that is the county. If the sheriffs of this country wake up in time and see that what you have mentioned is a definite possibility and more likely a probability because of H.R. 45 and the Small Arms Treaty that the United Nations is working out with Hillary Clinton and all the gun grabbers that Obama has in his administration. Every major gun grabber is either now getting appointed to the United States Supreme Court or now a czar in his administration or on his personal staff. So if the sheriffs will recognize that problem, and as I said, if the sheriffs get on board this movement, we keep this movement peaceful and effective. We will not have to have an armed resistance because the sheriffs will stop this before it gets started. What I have warned the sheriffs, though, true leadership recognizes what's coming and takes preemptive action and preparations. And so your question is very valid. It is real. For anyone to look at what is what kind of people are in Washington, D.C. right now, you'd have to be an idiot not to know that more gun control is coming. And it is. And so the question remains, how do we address this issue, and do the sheriffs put themselves in the way and practice the theory and doctrine of interposition and make sure they take a preemptive stand and let Washington, D.C. know that they will not tolerate in any manner any more gun control from Washington, D.C., that gun confiscation or gun registration will not happen in their counties, and let them know that anyone coming from the federal government to disarm law-abiding citizens will be met with resistance from the sheriff's office. And I would love to see sheriffs forming posses and making common ordinary citizens members of their posses. Sheriff Arpaio has 2,700 members of his posse.
Oh, wow.
And I would like to see everybody in the county who wants to become a member of the posse become a posse member. Let's see, what county are you in Utah?
Salt Lake County.
That the Salt Lake County Sheriff make you a member of the posse, that you guys set up your own training, that you go to the same kind of training that law enforcement goes to be armed, and that he issue identification to each one of you, that in case you're ever stopped or caught with a gun in any way, shape, manner, or form, that you show ID and say, I'm a member of the posse for the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, and that the card even says that you're required to be armed, that you've been through the police training and the posse academy, just as Sheriff Arpaio has in Phoenix. And right there, that is a huge step to make sure that you're not disarmed. But we need sheriffs standing up and participating in the plan of action that will preempt any type of gun control coming out of Washington, D.C. And that's one of our key components of what we're doing. We started the Constitutional Sheriffs Association, and I've talked to a lot of sheriffs, literally hundreds of sheriffs across this country, and every one of them agree that more gun control is coming and that we can and we will stop it. I've had sheriffs say that over my dead body, they'll come in here and do more gun control or gun confiscation. Well, as you said, gun registration is the same as confiscation because it is always followed. Registration is always followed by confiscation. And if they try this UN treaty and try to backdoor us through the UN to confiscate weapons, then again, every sheriff in this country can put a stop to that.
It's very refreshing to hear your views. Sheriff Richard Mack is on with us. I've got just a couple real quick questions here. We're running out of time. But are you a member of the Oath Keepers organization?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, they're a great organization. I'm looking forward to getting one of their representatives on. I had a question come in through a text message or through instant message. It said, how do statewide agencies compare to the sheriffs such as the Texas Rangers or state troopers?
That is a good question. They all take the same oath of office, but they do not. They're all bureaucrats, and so they kind of report to politicians instead of to the people. But I do want to reach out to them as well because they owe their oath of office to the people. And they have just as much a responsibility to become constitutional guards as do any other peace officers in this country, whether they're deputies or sheriffs or whatever. It's just that the sheriff specifically and particularly has a little bit more of a position to do so because he reports directly to the people. But every piece, I mean, I was a cop for Provo PD, and this is where I got converted to the Constitution and to the oath of office. So I hope that more peace officers across this country will do that. But the sheriff does have the ultimate power. The state police do not have power over the sheriff. No way.
Okay, so if state troopers are operating in your county, then the sheriff still has jurisdiction over them?
Well, he doesn't supervise them, but he can certainly put them in their place, I should say. And I don't want to cause a situation where people are saying, well, you stopped me as a highway patrolman. You stopped me, and the county sheriff doesn't know you're doing that, so you're out of line. That's not what I'm trying to create here.
Right.
What I'm trying to create is an education within all of them to follow the Constitution. I do foresee a time where maybe the sheriff would say, hey, that roadblock you're doing, and Utah loves roadblocks.
Yes, they do.
I'm against roadblocks. Roadblocks are illegal or unlawful. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Administrative checkpoints are unlawful. Stopping everybody on the street and asking them for their papers before they can move from point A to point B is immoral and wrong. And for any peace officer to say, oh, well, we're doing this because we're saving lives. Well, Patrick Henry said, is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? You cannot tell me that it's okay to justify your actions because you're saving lives or you're making DUI arrests. That's a bunch of BS. Follow the rules, follow the Constitution, and we can still do our jobs and stay within the rules ourselves. And so that's just another one of my pet peeves in law enforcement. So the sheriff can tell the feds or state police, look, you're not going to do those things in my county. If there's a time where there's been a kidnapping and you want to set up roadblocks to check cars, we still need to let the people know that those are voluntary, but we certainly hope that they will voluntarily stop and let us check their cars to make sure the kidnapping victim is not in the vehicle. Those happen very rarely, but that's the only time I would ever accept roadblocks. If you want to do a roadblock at all on New Year's Eve when there's a lot of drinking, and I'm against drunk driving just as much as the next guy, but I'm not going to violate the rules to go after criminals. That makes us, I'm not going to be a criminal to go get criminals. I never will, never have, and I'm not going to participate in that. So if you want to announce that these roadblocks and have a sign that the stopping is voluntary, then I would go ahead and support roadblocks. But I'm not going to sit there and say it's okay to check people's papers where they have license and registration and insurance and issue all these ridiculous tickets when people have done nothing wrong and there's no probable cause for the stop. And I'm not going to do that. And so that's one problem that I do have with state police.
As Sheriff Richard Mack is on, we're out of time, Sheriff Mack. When does the book, The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope, come out in an audio book format?
It should, you could probably order it any time, but it'll be on the, it'll probably be on my website within a week.
Okay. As the election draws nearer, I'd like to get you back on and get some of your views on some of the news that's going to inevitably come out from the election as it draws closer, if that's okay with you.
I would love to do that. Heck yeah, I would love to be a political analyst on elections. You know, I follow politics very closely, and I'd love to do that with you anytime.
Okay, I'd love to have it because I think your perspective is so unique and so refreshing from a seasoned law enforcement veteran. It's just great. His name is Sheriff Richard Mack. He's a model law enforcement officer and a true outstanding American patriot. Thanks a lot for taking some time out today, Sheriff Mack.
You bet. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
See you next time. That was Sheriff Richard Mack. What a great interview. I have a bunch more questions for him. I'll get to him next time. A couple of questions came in to me on IM, and I'll make sure I throw those on my question list, and we'll get your questions on for Sheriff Mack next time. Very interesting perspective he had on the drug war, on no-knock warrants, on SWAT teams, on the Second Amendment. I think we all knew where he stood there. He even talked about state secession a little bit and even future ramifications of gun control from the Obama administration. We are going to try one last time to get Neil Puckett on. If we can't get him on, we'll end the show just a little bit early. We're waiting right now for word from Seth to see if we've got him on. Like I said before, we are 985 days of Barack Obama still, you guys. It seems like it's been forever. It seems like this guy has been president for 4 years already, and we're just barely getting started. We have Neil Puckett on, outstanding. Let's go straight to him before we run out of time and get as much of an AAR, after-action report from the trial as we can. Mr. Puckett, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much for I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, don't even worry about it. Not a problem at all. We had Sheriff Mack on. We just flipped you to, reversed you to, and we'll get you on right now to close the show out nice and strong for us. Last we talked to you, you were headed into jury selection the next day for the trial for Petty Officer McCabe. We all know the results of that. Congratulations, I might add.
Thank you.
If you could go ahead and tell us kind of how it went down, the actual trial, the jury selection, you last told us that you would prefer an odd number of jurors, and that's what you got?
That's right. The jury selection went very well. There was one petty officer who had some problems at work, and so the prosecution excused him, and then no others were excused. We started with eight. But had a great panel. They seemed to pay really good attention, excellent questions from them. You know, military jurors can ask questions of the witnesses. The government's case was basically the insurgent who we had by deposition, my two excellent co-counsel, Lieutenant Anastas and Lieutenant Shea, the Navy JAGS who assisted us, went to Baghdad and did that deposition. His testimony was absolutely worthless. It was completely inconsistent with the evidence. And then the petty officer who testified against Matthew McCabe, he just wasn't credible.
Now, the petty officer who testified against Mr. McCabe, he was, as I understand it, he's looking forward to a career in law enforcement, and he was worried how the injured prisoner would look on his record. Is that correct?
Well, that's right, because it was his sole responsibility. His entire purpose for the deployment with the SEAL team was to take care of any detainees they had there. And, of course, he failed in that mission miserably. He was only had required to do his job 4 hours that morning and basically allowed the guy to injure himself, put him into a panic. He didn't know what to do, so his career and his life flashing before his eyes, and before you know it, he's making up stuff like a little kid with his hand caught in the cookie jar and pointing in some other direction, and that direction was Matthew McCabe.
Did the government bring any issues up that you were maybe surprised about or thought they might but didn't think they would and actually did?
Well, I don't think so. We had the good fortune of being third in the queue. We had the most of the records of the trial, the two trials that went before us, and they didn't try anything really different. Their arguments and their opening statements were exactly the same. Their witnesses were exactly the same. In our case, they had to be very careful not to open the door to testimony about Matt McCabe's polygraph result, which he passed.
Right.
And it was ironic. There was a statement that Matt had made to DeMartino earlier on talking about taking a polygraph, and they were all set to use that against him, but they knew if they did that the jury would get to hear about his past polygraph. So it was a trap that they didn't fall into. But there were some interesting moments in the case where the military judge displayed a kind of lack of knowledge of the law, and we were able to twist that back on the prosecution and get a few advantages. But I got to tell you, I believe going into the case, we had some really smart members of the jury, members of the panel. They paid good attention. I don't think they were prejudiced in any way before going into it. But once you hear that evidence, that's just not believable that these SEALs would commit these offenses. I think, that the rest of the job was easy.
So is it like a normal trial, civilian trial, where you have opening arguments and then the prosecution goes first and then defense goes? Is it the same format as far as that's concerned, or are there any differences?
No, it's exactly the same format. The main difference between the two systems is that for a civilian jury, you have to have a unanimous verdict either for an acquittal to get an acquittal, or you have to have a unanimous verdict for a conviction to get a conviction. For a military jury, the prosecutor needs to convince two-thirds of the panel for a conviction, and we only need to convince just slightly more than one-third that our client is not guilty. But I believe all seven members voted not guilty.
Four officers and three enlisted personnel, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And the government's big evidence was the testimony of Abed, which we all know it didn't jibe with the true facts and the evidence in the case. So the jury was only out for a few minutes, is that right?
Well, no, they were out for an hour and 40 minutes. The
okay.
other two cases had the times of about 2 hours. They were out an hour and 40 minutes. And I will tell you that I think the thing that made it happen was the fact that Petty Officer DeMartino was the sole eyewitness. And, everyone said, you've got an American service member who's actually a law enforcement person in the Navy making this allegation. But, he said so many strange things that were directly contradicted by the people about whom he said them. I think that, the investigation went further along and he had to make up details in order to account for certain evidence and certain facts. Just became apparent that, the only thing that stands the test of time is the truth. Lies never do.
Absolutely. Once again, I want to congratulate you. You did a fantastic job representing you, your colleague, Mr. I don't want to
Farage.
Mispronounce. Mr. Farage. I didn't want to mispronounce his last name. You also spoke highly. I saw you on Fox News. You spoke highly of the two JAG officers that were assigned to the case and their work in the deposition. It was just an outstanding team effort all the way around. As far as Petty Officer
McCabe, I would love to put that team to work against our case coming later in September. Staff Sergeant Wooderich from the Haditha incident. He's still facing charges from 2005, and we still have to take care of that. But, yeah, it was a tremendous team effort, and we had a great outcome. And, you know, just to add, I think it was probably the hardest of the three cases because Matt was the one accused of actually punching the guy.
Right. Right. He had the tough charges on him. Everybody else was kind of being charged with complicit accessory type stuff, but he was the actual quote-unquote perpetrator they were trying to accuse. What's next for Matthew McCabe?
Well, as of today, he rejoined his team and some training out in the western desert area, a particular training area they have out there, so he's doing some desert training. So he's back in full duty and right back in part of the training package that they do to prepare themselves for the next deployment, and he anticipates going on another deployment. He's not sure when, but basically all three of these guys are back to duty, back to training, and back to getting ready to for their next opportunity to defend America.
That's such great news to know he's back in the saddle again. As far as his record is concerned, it's 100% spotless now. None of this retains on his record?
100% spotless. He has a blemish-free record, and it's legally and administratively, it's as if nothing ever happened. So he has certainly it was an 8-month timeout for all these guys with their future uncertain. But
right.
He's now out of the reach of the Army commander who put him in jeopardy.
One last question before we wrap it up. You spoke a little bit about what's next for you. I was going to ask you that. If you want to talk a little bit about that case coming up that you have in September.
Well, some of your listeners may or may not remember, if they follow Military Matters, the case of the Haditha incident. Our client was on 60 Minutes. It was rebroadcast a few times and won them the Peabody Award. After an IED exploded and killed a Marine and severely injured two others, and there were coordinated attacks throughout the city of Haditha, Iraq, my client and a small fire team went on lieutenant's orders, went south to clear some houses. And at the end of the day, 24 civilians had been killed in that neighborhood. Of course, you know, the enemy always chooses the place where they set off IEDs, and this was in the middle of a residential neighborhood. But then they received
right.
sniper fire, and they pursued that sniper fire. And so there were four officers and four enlisted charged with some aspect of responsibility for the killings of these 24 civilians, and that's still unresolved for my client. There have been 2 years of delays in appellate proceedings, and so now we're set for trial in September, and we hope to win him an acquittal as well. His name is Staff Sergeant Frank Wooderich. Folks who are interested in more might go to his website, frankwooderich.com, W-U-T-E-R-I-C-H, frankwooderich.com.
frankwooderich.com. Check it out, everybody. And maybe we can have you on as that trial approaches and kind of get the lowdown of it and where you think you're going to go with it.
Absolutely. I would love to come on and share with folks. And if anybody has questions, be happy to answer questions anytime.
Outstanding. Neil Puckett, attorney at law. He's a former lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps. Thank you for his service, and congratulations, Mr. Puckett, on another job well done and an acquittal for Petty Officer McCabe.
Well, thanks for your support of Petty Officer McCabe in the case. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, everybody, that's all the time we have for tonight, another Radio Free ARFCOM episode. The time just flies by here. We have a great show coming up next week. We're going to be talking about appleseed shoots. There's a lot of people that are for them, a lot of people against them. We're going to have a representative from the Appleseed Shoot organization come on and talk to us, give us a breakdown of what they're all about, what changes they have coming up for the appleseed shoots, and just kind of a rundown of the whole thing. I want to thank Merrill, as usual, for posting the links up. I want to thank Direct Action, a.k.a. Joe DeBurgolis, our resident NRA board member. He's in Charlotte right now. If you have a chance to go to the Charlotte NRA meetings this weekend, everybody, I encourage you to attend. It's going to be a great show, and it doesn't cost you anything to get in. I'd like to thank Anthony and Liam Gorman from the Band-Aid Drive. Everybody, check out the Band-Aid Drive. Send some of these character Band-Aids for these kids that have the transfusions. It's just a heart-wrenching story. I'd like to thank Mr. Puckett again. Sheriff Richard Mack, what an outstanding guest and outstanding law enforcement. and a patriot. Seth, thank you for engineering a great show behind the scenes. Nobody really gets to hear your voice too much, but you're back there getting the hard work done and making it easy for me. We'll see everybody next week. God bless the great Republic of the United States of America.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.